All right, folks. Well, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. This is the forums edition. We're going to be pulling a hand from our Rec Poker forums, which are free to join, of course, and talk about it here on the air. Our regular listeners will know my name is Jim Reed. I'm Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world. I'm your host here on the Rec Poker Podcast, talking about this game we love with all my poker friends here at Rec Poker. Now, I have to mention that we are brought to you by Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. They are the official sponsor of everything we do on the podcast here at Rec Poker. And it's so important that we have them because we're a largely volunteer-based organization. Most of what we do here is free. So we really depend on the support of our sponsors and our premium members. And you can sign up for free, get a free community account here. All it takes is an email address and a smile. But we do encourage you to dip a toe into our premium membership. You're going to meet a few of our Wrecking Crew members in a moment. But there are just a few of this group of wizards, we call them the Wrecking Crew, that help make the magic happen here at Rec Poker. And there's lots of ways to get involved with our training material, study sessions, and that kind of stuff. It's all here at Rec Poker, so come and check it out. Now, you get used to hearing my voice on Mondays, but like I mentioned, I'm just a small part of what we do here at Rec Poker. If you want to find out about me or other members of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew, but you can just listen up. You're going to meet a few of them here on the show tonight.
I'm Kim Kilroy. I'm PetBet or PetBet33 on social platforms. I'm usually Fergie56 in the home game, and once a month I run a hand history review where we'll talk about hands a lot like this.
Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm Mr. Bullet on the Rec Poker page. And once a month, I have like an office hours where we talk about hands and strategy.
And I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And on the first and third Wednesdays of every month, you can join me and a bunch of our premium folk as we talk about the latest poker books.
And that's just a sampling of some of the stuff that we have going on here every day, week, and month at Rec Poker. One of the other perks of joining our premium membership is you get to come and join the show here on the forums edition of the podcast. Stuart Carriage, you've been a premium member for a while, and we've become friends. It's great to see you here in the forums edition. Where can folks find you, and what's your handle in the home game if people want to know whose chips they're stealing?
Cool. I'm Stewie13 or Stewie in the home games, and I'm here to support you guys, and I support Kim in the hand history, and I try to get to the forums. Come become a premium member. It's great.
Yeah, thanks, Stu. I think so, too. It's great to have you here. So one of the great things about Rec Poker, we're, like I say, we love poker. We love helping people get better at poker. We love sharing our love of poker. One of the highlights is our free forums. So there's a lot of different things you can post about in the forums, whether it's travel plans, goals, ways to study, tips. One of the big ones are hand histories, and we talk about a lot of strategy in the Rec Poker forums. We're looking at a post today by Mikey Aces, and I think Mikey has written in before. That username rings a bell for me. He's talking about a final table ICM jailhouse. So let's just dive right in, and then we'll see what the panel has to say. So Mikey, our correspondent, says, this might be a little dramatic, but here's the situation. It's the final table of the $10 Ignition Monster Stack. It's a 6K guarantee. One player has been eliminated. The hero has 23 big blinds and sits sixth out of eight in chips. The chip leader has 45 big blinds, second has 36, and five players are between 22 and 27, and one player has nine big blinds. The payout structure is $96 for eighth, $137 for seventh, $194 for sixth, $274 for fifth, $387 for fourth, $546 for third, $773 for second, and $1,089 for first. And I'm just putting those numbers out there because anytime we're talking about ICM and have to do some calculations, it matters what the payouts are. So play is eight-handed at the time of the hand. Under the gun, min raises to two big blinds off a 27 big blind starting stack. Hero is an under the gun plus one, or I guess what Eric Jin would call early position, and has ace-king suited. Now, maybe we should just pause here and think about what we would do in real time in this spot. So we're in the money already. The under-the-gun player has min raised. We're next to act with ace-king suited. What do people... What's the first thing that comes to people's mind? Are we calling, raising?
Does under-the-gun have us covered?
Good question. So let me see. Hero has 23, because that matters a lot, right? Hero has 23 big blinds, and under the gun has 27. So they just have us covered. Yep.
Yeah. And I knew that. I was just making sure that everybody else did too.
Yeah. Thanks,
Rob. So I've read this post. I think this is the spot where you can just jam 23 big blinds.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a spot you can do that at this point in the hand. There's some other decisions that'll be made later that we'll have to discuss.
All right. Stewie, you unmuted too. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I agree. Are you really going to fold ace king suited? He's trying to win this tournament. Right. You want what's up top. So
yeah
I think I'm probably.
I prefer a raise here. I might say a jam of ace king offsuit might be good, but with ace king suited, I prefer a small raise to maybe five big blinds, something like that. This guy under the gun, you got to remember, he's raising into the big stacks. His actual range is going to be tighter than normal for an under the gun raise, in my opinion. So I would just be playing a little more cautiously, and I would just probably raise here.
Are you raising with the potential of folding later?
Potential of folding later, depending on the action behind me.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
Mark, did you have any thoughts at this point, or should we continue?
Yeah, I think I would agree with Kim that I would have made it 5 or 5.2 and jam acing offsuit. Well, that's what I would have played before I look at any sim.
Yes. And for our listeners at home, you guys are, you're jamming ace king offsuit and you're making the smaller bet with ace king suited. Can you just talk a little bit about that decision and why you're choosing one action for one hand and the other for the other? Mark, you can go first. Yeah.
It's just because ace-king offsuit has less equity than ace-king suited. And I think if you want to have bluffs, let's say you want to bluff some hand like ace-5 suited or ace-9 suited, you would also make it 5 big blinds. So ace-king suited just complements that very well.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. And of course, and we talk about this a lot, about also having a little more playability too. If there is any chance that you're going to see a flop, you'd rather do it with a suited hand. I know that's only
part that's of what I meant. But more equity, but you're right.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So it looks like no one's folding and no one's calling. So the only question is of the panel here: are we making a small bet or are we shoving? As played, our hero does 3-bet to 5.7 big blinds, which is about what you guys had in mind, just a little larger. And then the short stack positioned in the hijack, 4-bet jams. It folds back around to the original.
How many big blinds did he have, Jim?
He set the short stack, so I'm so 9 big blinds, I'm guessing.
Okay, all right,
I'm guessing. There we go. Thank you, Rob. Thank you. And I will
makes
say
a folks, difference.
Of it course makes a it difference. Does. Of course it does. And folks, I'll put the link to this forum post in the show notes. So you can go, you don't even need an account to go and just click on the link and see the details here, because our correspondent, Mikey Ace, has put a lot of details into this post, which is fantastic. So we appreciate that. So the action folds back to the original Razor Who Jams as well, and they have us covered. So I'll just run through it real quick. So Under the Gun opens to 2x. We make a small 3-bet in position. We get jammed on by a player behind us, and then the Under the Gun player rejams as well. So our decision is to call at this point or to fold. And that's sort of the first question that Mikey Aces brings. Would you call 3-bet or 3-bet jam? And given the action, do you call or fold? And he also wants to know, what is your calling range in this situation? So let me see. Rob, you unmuted first. Why don't you jump in? Facing the 4-bet and the jam, what's your action?
Well, since this is an ICM situation, we need to understand where we are at equity-wise in this hand before we even make that 3-bet. For first of all, I think the 3-bet's too big. 5.7 is too big out of 20 from 23 big blinds. I think both Kim and Mark mentioned 5 or 5.2, which is very, very reasonable. Now, the question you have here is, if you're raising with the intention of calling anything, then why are you raising? I mean, the only reason you would raise is to get people to fold and to have the option of folding yourself if things turn south. Now, he did mention in this pot, in this posting, that he had 3-bet this player once before and the player had folded. And so I'm kind of thinking that that's why he 3-bet, was to try to get this guy to fold. But he didn't give his reasoning as to what he would do if the guy went over the top of him. So I think he just made a bet, hoping the guy would fold and the hand would go on to the next, you know, everybody would fold and the hand would go on to the next. And he didn't really think through his whole decision process before he made that raise.
I'm just laughing because we're having a dog break into the broadcast over here on Stuart's screen. Looks like you two are having a great time there, Stu. No, I love it. More dogs, the better. More dogs are better. Jim, Rob.
Just for a point of interest, I ran this in the ICM calculator, and he had $415 of equity. So he had better than fourth place money equity in this hand before we even started.
Because of his chips, stack.
Because of the chip stacks are between 21 and 27. There's five people between 21 and 27 big blinds. So they're really, really close in equities because the chip stacks are so closely married together. So he's actually got better than fourth place money equity in this tournament right now with his current chip stack. So I just wanted to throw that out there so everybody could think about that as they ran their solutions.
Mm-hmm. Kim, you unmuted next.
Yeah. So without ICM, this is just an easy call. We wouldn't even be talking about this hand. This is just a super easy call without ICM. When he asks what hands I would call with, it would be kings and aces in this spot. Maybe I wouldn't do it, but it's really hard to fold ace king suited here. We're all taught like what a great hand it is and all that. But your chips are worth so much at this point. All we have to do is get our double up and we're going to be one of the chip leaders. Right. So going against someone that's probably got a stronger hand than ours, it's not optimal in an ICM spot with this much ICM pressure. But it's really hard to fold there. So I don't blame anyone for not folding. And maybe when he makes his 3-bet so big, now he has to call
off. So I'll take us through some of the thoughts that Mikey Aces here posted. He says, so he tanked for almost my entire time bank before making a decision. And after thinking it through, decided my calling range should be queens, kings, aces, and ace king suited. And that queens feels a little bit loose. And that I would fold ace king off, which feels a bit nitty. he says the rationale behind this is that we are currently sixth out of eight. We're risking our tournament life. And he goes to talk about some of his hand ranging here and what the other players might be thinking about his ones. He also points out, as you mentioned, Kim, if you win this hand, you're the clear chip leader, which is great. And you'd also cripple the other player who would be under the risk of busting soon, which is great. Mikey also says he's got blockers with ace king here, which means that it's obviously less likely that your opponents have aces or kings, but of course we are going to be dominated when they do. And if we fold, we still have 18 big blinds, which is still a good amount to work with moving forward, although it would be the second smallest stack at the table. He also says, so with 23 big blinds, he thinks 3-bet is the best option here. And there was a way to, he goes through some other, and folks, click on the link for this one. You'll find some fantastic details in here about how Mikey's thinking about the hand. And I think a lot of it is bang on. Mark, do you have anything to add before we get into the results and sort of what? No. Okay. So as played, Mikey does call it off and says that he valued the prospect of winning the tournament. So this is like the future play, What's that expression? I'm losing my mind doing this live. It's the opposite. Game? Yeah. Future game simulation. Yeah. Thank you. Where when you have more chips, it's more valuable because you get to run over the table more effectively. So it's sort of like the anti ICM factor that pulls you in the other direction a little bit. And his blocker value is also a big contributor as well. And being suited gives him some more potential, obviously, which is why he called it off. The actual results are the short stack had ace queen and under the gun had queen queen. And we did not improve, unfortunately. And both Mikey and the short stack were taken out in that hand. And so we did end up laddering up one spot anyway, but that wasn't the way that it was that he was hoping it would go. And Mikey references some charts and that sort of thing as well, and doesn't want to be results oriented, but it is a very tough spot. Kim, you talked about like sort of it's a threshold spot in ICM, even though it's a clear call in a non-ICM spot. What else was on your mind there? I just saw you unmuted.
Yeah, I did, because we've got this small short stack shoving, and the short stack is likely shoving one of our outs or two of our outs or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And if we assume after the under the gun goes all in, that the worst hand they have is ace king, and that more than likely they have a pair. So. Because we do block ace king pretty heavily. But right. When we've got that short stack in there, it's highly likely that one of our outs is gone.
Yeah, good point. So. Mark?
So I have a question to all of you guys. What do you guys think the short stack shoving? Like you mentioned ace king, and what about ace queen suited, jacks, tens, where's the line?
I think the short stack is going to be jamming a lot. I think a lot of pocket pairs are going to be jamming, just about any pocket pairs. Maybe not twos, threes, and fours, but sixes plus probably with that short of a stack. They can withstand a lot more ICM pressure than anybody else at the table because they don't have enough chips to where their equity is that much that they're going to lose that much if they lose this hand. They have much more to gain than they do have to lose. So they can have a pretty wide range. I'd say just about any pocket pairs. Any ace X, king X type hands that are reasonable, you know, maybe king nine, king 10 plus, ace 10 plus. He's going to have a lot. He's going to have a big range.
I think that's too wide, personally, to a raise and a re-raise, to a raise and a three bet. I think that short stack, knowing that he doesn't have any fold equity, is probably going to may do that against one raiser, but probably not against the three better. In my opinion, they're just going to, nine big blinds is still nine big blinds, and they can do a lot of damage to all those medium stacks. So I think their range is going to be a little bit tighter than that.
This is a $10 ignition tournament.
we're trying to talk in bigger.
I love it when we have these discussions on here, because this is one of the things that, like, you know, it does matter, like, what game we're playing in, but, you know, we're also trying to figure out, like, what's the right way to play it. It's not always, you know, not always the same answer. Sorry, Mark, what were you saying there?
So let's say it's the main event of the WSOP. Would you shove sixes then?
No.
So why would you shove it in that spot? Just because it's a $10 tournament doesn't mean we shouldn't take it serious. I don't know. Like, it's still a fine table. It's still.
I didn't say that that's what I would do. That is the range I would put somebody else at an ignition tournament. That's the range I would put them on. I would never do it. I would probably fold ace queen right there. Because I'm looking at it, a possibility of potentially laddering up, you know, when that second highest stack goes out. So personally, I would never play ace queen that way in that spot.
So
I'm really tight and nitty when it gets to ICM, even with a short stack.
What about tens of jacks?
No, I'd probably fold them too. I think with the action
I'm
in front of
tens.
Me,
with I'm the seven action, tens.
I have to say again, I play ICM spots like that very, very tight. I probably do not jam over a raise and a three bet with anything but aces or kings, because I have no fold equity whatsoever. There is absolutely no fold equity. So the other types of hands that you can jam, I mean, if you're the first one in, I jam with tens. I jam with nines. I jam with a lot of stuff that I would never jam over a bet and a three bet, or an open and a three bet. So I would never do that. I'm just talking about the types of players that we're going to find in an ignition $10 tournament.
Yeah, that classic conversation we always have here between sort of like, what does the solver say we should do versus what should we do in the, like, low stakes casual games that we're playing in, where people are making bigger mistakes, like you're pointing out, Rob, like players that are shoving a lot wider back there, just not being as savvy about this kind of stuff. Right. Stu, you unmuted. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was going to say, when we were in Baltimore, like Kim was saying, that nine big blinds is still quite a lot. Do you remember when we were in Baltimore? I ladded up five spots with six big blinds.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, his range is probably pretty tight there if he thinks the way that I was thinking with ICM.
Yep. So, I remember that one. I remember that trip.
Yeah, you don't have to just be shoving because you're supposed to go out next. You know, you can move up. And if he ladders up one more, that's a bonus for the short stack.
Yep.
And I agree 100%. Like I say, I would have folded everything but aces or kings in that spot if I was a short stack, just because of the action in front of me. But I see people in these types of tournaments playing all kinds of garbage, ICM unaware. It's like ICM is three letters that don't mean anything to them. And all they know is that, well, I don't have any chips left. I got a pocket pair. Let's see if I can get lucky. You know, and that's the mentality that I see a lot in these small stakes, especially ignition tournaments.
Hmm. Yeah, well, we have to sort of tailor our play to the people at the table with us, right? Like, when we're constructing ranges, it's important that we make assumptions that are based on reality, you know? So the better assumptions we can make about the players at our table, the better decisions we'll be able to make as a player.
I still think that we can get a pretty good play at a $10 tournament when we reach final table online. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of players are studied to some degree.
I'm not saying you're not. I'm just saying there's more often than not, you're going to find people that are going to be way too wide. And the next thing I wanted to talk about is if you three bet, three flop, that gives you an opportunity to get away from the hand.
Mm-hmm.
If you jam pre-flop, obviously it's a done deal. But if you three bet pre-flop, what was the intention of the three bet pre-flop if he was going to call off against a bigger stack that's under the gun, that's opening under the gun in a heavy ICM spot? For one thing, like I said, the ICM he had $415 worth of equity in this tournament. If he wins this flip, he has $590 worth of equity. So he's gaining like $85 or $75. He's gaining $75 of equity. In reality, he lost $278 in equity by making that call. So basically, if you're going to raise three bet like that in that spot, you've got to be prepared to fold to the bigger stack who jams over the top of you, period.
So this is one thing that you mentioned earlier, Rob, and I want to ask the panel their thoughts on this as well, because we talk about reasons to three bet versus jamming. And sometimes it's like you're talking about, where we want to have an opportunity to get away from the hand in like a ladder situation or an ICM spot. But sometimes we're doing it to induce jams from weaker holdings. If we're holding ace king and we think someone's going to jam with ace queen or ace jack or something like that. I guess that my question to the group here is it strictly an ICM factor that makes us want to shove here instead of three bet calling with a hand like ace king? And are there circumstances where we actually don't mind three bet calling with ace king as opposed to shoving? Mark, you're unmuted right now, so I'll ask you first. Are there these circumstances where we might three bet with the plan to call versus three betting with the plan to fold?
Okay, let me put it this way.
Okay.
If we jam, what hands is the other guy going to call?
Right. Very super premium hands.
I'm asking actually like everyone, like what do you think the guy is calling you?
So kings and aces, queens maybe?
Jacks?
Yeah. Probably not.
Okay. So if we three bet, are those hands they going to jam?
I expect, yes, I think so. I think they would. Maybe not. So, yeah.
So basically the outcome is the same.
Right. But right. Would they jam other hands, though? But would they jam other hands
that's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
That's the thing. Like, what, like, so if we jam, it's going to call the same range as if we would three bet. And we would, I would three bet to call it off.
Okay.
And it would be up against the same range, the kind of hands. And what the solver does is, as under the gun player, it would take every suited ace that he opens with and four bet rip.
Hmm.
And now the question is, do you see that happening in reality?
Hmm.
Like, do you see the guy just under the gun against under the gun one, looking down at ace two suited and be like, let's run it, baby?
Yeah, I think Rob is saying that in his experience, you do not see that.
So the EV of ace king suited actually comes from inducing the guy to jam every suited ace that is worse than ace king. So I don't see that happening in real life, like in any tournament. So to get back to like to the actual answer, it actually, I think it doesn't matter. If they are not forward jamming those hands, then the EV of three betting is considered, or not three bet, of all jamming, right? The three bet would be to call it off. Actually, I think it's pretty close. It's almost like even. Just because you don't see the bluff jams.
Right.
And the bluff jams only happen if we have bluffs ourselves pre-flop, like the ace-9 suited and like the ace-5 suited. But again, here is where it deviates again. The least amount of people, they have those. So that's why people don't end up jamming. And it's like a circle, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I guess, I honestly, I do struggle with this sometimes in real time at the table, because I feel like I want to get my ace king hands in against a weaker range than would call my shove. And I feel like by inducing the four bet, my ace king, which is the same hand it's going to be no matter what, is going to be going up against a weaker range that raises into me than calls my shove. And the downside of that is that you have to actually then realize your equity, and even some of the hands that you're behind can beat you. But Mark, what are your thoughts there?
Something else you also have to reconsider is that if you jam, you actually allow every person behind you to play almost perfect. And if you three bet, you actually open the door for people to make mistakes, to like four bet jam or to call their ace suited or their pocket tens or whatever. I'm not sure if they call pocket tens, if it would be an actual mistake. I think it's a small mistake. Like all these factors go into the EV of ace suited. So, yeah, it really depends on the table, but like I will stand behind the answer that if we don't face the four bet bluff jams, you can basically do whatever you want, like three betting or jamming. Like I would not fold preflop. That's the only thing. That would be by the punt.
And so, should we be exploitatively three betting wider here with hands that we are very comfortable folding to a raise, if we feel like we have any fold equity at all? Like, it does look very strong. Like, you're covered by the player. They're in first position, so they're their tightest possible range, opening into players that have them covered. Like, your three bet does look really strong there, which should inform the way that we think about the other ranges that continue afterwards.
So, okay, I can answer all of those questions now because I have the game, and it has, like, since the moment we started talking, it has ran 800 million times, the same spot. So it should be somewhat accurate.
Okay.
It would be more accurate if I leave it for another half hour, but can give you like the numbers that you guys are curious about.
Yeah, sure. I'm interested.
If we three bet ace king suited, it would make $18.8. Like in that $10 tournament, which is like two buy-ins. And the jam would make 18.4. Okay.
So very, very close. Very close decision, it seems like, if I'm hearing you correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. So aces would make $72 as a three bet and $57 as a jam.
So aces benefit more from
three betting,
reopening the action, as opposed to jamming, which makes sense. Reason.
Yeah. What another interesting thing is, how would you play your ace queen offsuit, your ace queen suited, your pocket jacks, pocket tens? I think like you know, like the, we figured out that it's considered is like basically whatever. But again, like the way I approach it is, okay, we figured out this hand, but what about our weaker hands? What about ace king offsuit? We said that we would jam it, and I sort of agrees that it would rather jam. But what about the worst hands? What about ace queen offsuit? Would you guys play that hand? How about ace queen suited, queens, jacks, tens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rob, you unmuted. What's in your mind there?
No, I unmuted before he asked that particular question, so I wasn't quite ready to.
Fair enough.
One of the things that we've talked about quite a bit when we've talked about ICM in the past is how difficult it is playing with an ICM strategy against a whole bunch of players that don't understand what ICM is. So again, this is the kind of tournament you're in, you know. So I'm just going to say I would play it totally different than what the solvers would tell me to do, because I'm going to be playing against the field and not against a robot.
Mm-hmm.
So at that moment in time, to me, it's more of a feeling, is this person ICM aware? And if he is, I can get a kind of an idea of what kind of ranges he's going to have. If he's not, he's going to have the same range as he had at the beginning of the tournament. So that's probably about all I'm going to say.
Oh, let me challenge you then. What do you think he's opening?
At this point in time, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me what I think he's opening. No,
but no, for the
what do I think he's over? I mean, 4-bet jamming with is the question. I don't care what he's opening with.
Sure.
If I 3-bet and he folds, it doesn't matter what he's opening with. It's what is he going to 4-bet jam me with?
Well, so what is it?
It's aces, kings, queens, basically, is what I'm saying. And the thing about ICM that I think a lot of people lose in the way to play in ICM heavy situations is you don't want to be the guy calling. You don't want to be the guy calling unless you have aces and kings and can be very confident that you're just boom, because the people that you're calling against have really strange ranges. So you don't want to be the guy calling. I love the 3-bet. That's great. Put a 3-bet out there. But when that guy jams over the top of you, what is he doing it with? This is a heavy ICM situation. You've got only 4 big blinds less than he does. He's going to be crippled. What is he willing to cripple himself with against a 3-bet? Aces, kings, queens, things that you're doing is you're flipping a coin. Do you want to flip a coin for $278 at this point in the tournament, or do you just want to fold and play the next hand where maybe you can be the guy putting the first bet in? You could be the guy jamming into somebody else, putting the pressure on them to make a decision.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rob, about, you know, calling being the most dangerous option in ICM spots. You know, you're better off to be overfolding or overshoving than overcalling, you know, as which is true of a lot of tournament play generally, but specifically when it comes to ICM. I want to just take off on this point that Rob mentioned about playing against players that you don't know how ICM aware they are. Like, Mark, I think it changes the ranges that these players would take these actions with if they're not ICM aware. So does that mean that we have to then be tighter because it's more likely that it's going to go to showdown because they don't know how tight they have to be? Like, how does that affect if players are not as ICM aware, or if we don't know how ICM aware they are, how do we kind of combat against that while we're playing?
So at some point, if people are way out of line. They just lose money, and it doesn't matter how if they're ICM aware or not. Because like if someone's not ICM aware, they're just going to punt, and like it's just a matter of time. Like you see it, right? At the table, you know who's going to punt and not. And to credit Rob, if you think that the guy is shoving queens and ace king, obviously then don't call ace king suited. But that's why your assumptions have to be right. What if I'm sitting there, I'm just saying run it with ace five suited and with like an ace four suited? Then you're holding out a lot of like money. You're leaving money at the table. So yeah, I agree that if the guy is really just so tight, then I would fold ace king, obviously.
Yep.
But the moment your assumption is a little off, you're just losing money.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, poker is a game of incomplete information, right? And we all want, especially recreational players, we want to be sure about this stuff. And that's just not how this works, right? You just don't get to be sure.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I was talking to a recreational about it and like he doesn't like to get it in without having it. And I'm like, right. Yeah, I don't care about it. Like, because the reason why you want to have it is because you want to be sure. But because coming from a professional, I don't care about being sure. I only care about the money I make with a certain action. I have bills to pay.
That's right.
Like, I don't care about being right. I just care about, does it make money? The play.
And there's another dynamic here that as a recreational player and as recreational players in general, we're playing, he's playing in a live or he's playing on an Ignition tournament, right? He's playing a $10 tournament. Now, I don't know that Mikey Aces is a professional player who's playing 50 to 100 tournaments a day, where all he has to do is make the right decision at every single point. This is a guy that might be playing one or two tournaments that day. And then he goes to work and he has other stuff going on. He's got kids, he's got whatever. And maybe he's going to play another couple of tournaments on Sunday. You know, it's a totally different dynamic than somebody who is a professional poker player who is making money playing online tournament after tournament after tournament. So I just want to, I'm looking at it more like somebody in a live setting would look at it. In a live tournament where you might play a couple times a week at your local casino, it's a $100 buy-in is probably pretty equivalent to a $10 Ignition tournament. You know, that type of tournament and that type of recreational player can't afford to ignore the player pool in favor of making the GTO decision.
No, but the GTO decision is to fold ace-king suited one if you think the guy is jamming greens and ace-king. Solver isn't stupid. You can actually tell the solver if the guy is doing this, what you should do, right? And it would give you the answer.
But would you fold ace-king there? Ace-king suited there? You just said you would not because you would expect person to have bet four bet jammed with more than aces, kings, or queens.
I would think he would go with jacks and ace king, and then that's why I would call. Right. You said that they would go with queens and ace king, and then the server would fold. I can try running it again with if the
no,
guy.
That's fine. I understand what you're saying.
So like basically, I agree with you, but I just gave him a different four bet range, like four bet shove range,
right.
Yeah, so it's the assumptions about the ranges, and this is what makes this is why I love these conversations. Kim, you had something there.
No, I was just saying that after listening to Rob go on there, I feel like he's been deep in exploitative study lately.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's right.
And not deep in the solver GTO streets.
You are correct.
Yeah, that's right. Rob,
I spent 2 years deep in the GTO study because that's what our books were all about. And now we're on an exploitative book, and I'm really enjoying it because there's so many nuances that you don't get.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Rob's really found his spirit animal in Alex Assassinato Fitzgerald, the book he's working on now, Exploiting Live Players. That's a great call out, Kim. I think that's true. All right. Well, this has been a really good conversation. I love it when we disagree on the show about the assumptions we're making about hand raiders. Yeah, Kim.
Did we actually tell the listeners what happened in the hand and what everybody ended up with? I don't think
that's a good point. I may have mentioned it, but short stack had ace queen, under the gun had queens. We busted, but so did the short stack. So the short stack went out in eighth. We went out in seventh. We did ladder up one position, and actually had a fair amount of equity given the hands that they had. But I do agree with our panelists here that they often are going to have stronger hands there. Mark, what's on your mind?
Also, like the solver tells me that if that situation happens, we should call kings and aces.
Mm-hmm.
So, based on the fact that the short stack went all in?
Okay, so the short stack is shoving a range of pocket queens and ace king offsuit. Jacks is the fold. Queens would make $11, ace king offsuit would make $21, aces would make $120. Mm-hmm. And then the early position, like the pre-flop open raiser, he would shove kings and ace king suited only. So he wouldn't shove queens, he wouldn't shove ace king offsuit.
Interesting.
Okay.
And then the call of range would be kings and aces.
Yep. That's interesting. That's very interesting. Mark, for our listeners at home, what program are you using to run this?
HRC Beta.
Okay.
I can actually, wait, let me screenshot how it looks like. And
sure.
An idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Rob, do you have anything else? I saw you on mute there.
No, I was just going to mention that's something that Keith Brandt has been touting on his Discord channel, is HRC Beta. So I know that's a product that he's also been working with. And cool. I actually use the free version, the ICM calculator, to come up with when I'm trying to figure out bubble factors and all that kind of stuff on HRC resources.
Nice, nice. Well, there are a lot of great tools out there. It's amazing.
So I am on a different computer where I run the same because it takes a lot of computing power. Yeah. And I send you the link on Discord. Maybe you can share it with the group here. You can copy paste the link.
I'd love to. Yeah, please do. I'll make sure that I'll put it in the show notes too. I'll take a screenshot of it and
on Discord.
Let me just jump into Discord right now and take a look. And
it sounds like you have a multi-way solver there.
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Because normally most of the solvers today are heads up, right? Usually when you do GTO Wizard or one of those, it's basically they don't have any multi-way capabilities. But yes, HRC does have multi-way.
Yes, I can even four-way all-ins.
You can run four-way all-ins.
Yeah, think. But it just takes so much computing power. I usually add it to four-way, and it's already big. Like for an actual sim, I would probably need like an hour to run. And I have a pretty powerful computer.
That's very
cool. It would not work on a laptop.
Wow. Right.
Well, then I can't use it.
Like, maybe if you have a really good laptop.
I can barely run GTO Plus.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I do see it here, and I'll include a screenshot of this image in the show notes as well. And, I mean, it's hard to argue when you see it sort of mathematically broken down like that.
I mean, 800 million times.
Right. Yeah, that's that's more than we're going to cover with our puny human brains here on the podcast. But this is great. I really like these discussions where we have some different ideas coming into it, because making assumptions about players' ranges is really what poker is all about, you know, and we are going to disagree based on our own preconceived notions and who we think the players are and what they do in certain spots. But it's something you should be practicing, and it's something you should be bouncing off your friends and talking to other people about, because, you know, nailing those assumptions about players' ranges is a huge advantage as a player.
Yeah,
Mark?
Yes, and in HRC Pro Beta, you can actually put in your assumptions and the server would give you the actual solution. Like, it's basically what you would do in a live environment after seeing, like, I don't know, an entire year worth of hands. Mm-hmm. And it just does it faster. It does it 800 million times.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty hard to argue with. So is that essentially like node locking is kind of what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's called node locking. You're telling him, oh, let's just remove that one combo. Let's let him shove like queens and ace-king. What do we call then? And actually, if you can look at the screenshot that I send you, and there's a little lock, if you can see it in the middle. And like I locked him to jam jacks and ace-king suited and ace-king offsuit, and then it would call off kings plus. So
I see.
It's the same assumption that Rob was making.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. And there's a GTO solved GTO solution to any assumption you can put out there. That's kind of how it works. It just solves these different spots.
And it gives you the exact EV. Like it tells you how much money you're going to be making. Because what if you're making a play and it's only making like, I don't know, $1, and then you can say, oh, I don't have to take this edge. Like I can pass up that $1 and take a spot that is worth like $50, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that, it's the number or the EV or the quantification of each play that GTO, not GTO, but HRC Beta would help you make pretty well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we should always be comparing our options to what is the most profitable compared to these other options. You know, you can find one option and find that it's profitable. That doesn't mean that it's the most profitable option available to you. So that's why it's important.
So what most people look at a solve, they see it's green, so they play it.
Right.
So it's not how it works. It's actually the EV behind it.
Yeah, I love it. Well, it's been a really interesting conversation, folks. We plumbed some depths. We got into some rabbit holes like we usually do. I just want to remind our listeners, a lot of the Wrecking Crew members love to work with our members through our coaching program. If you go to rec.poker/coaching, you can get some one-on-one access to some of the folks here on the panel tonight. And they would love to work with you to bring your game to the next level, to help you understand how to get the most out of these fantastic tools that are available these days. I guarantee you, for $50 or $100 an hour, you're going to find some people that can improve your understanding of the game of poker. And it's worth it to get a little help every once in a while, just to shine a light on the steps ahead and see if you can take your game to the next level with a little help. We all need a little help every once in a while. So head on over to rec.poker/coaching if you'd like to talk to some of our Wrecking Crew members about how they can work with you. Well, thank you, Wrecking Crew members. This was a really interesting conversation. Rob, Kim, and Mark, I really enjoyed talking with you. Stu, it was great to have you in the room for this one, like it always is. Looking forward to seeing you in Ireland real soon. Thanks to the Running Aces, Hotel, Racetrack, Casino, and Hotel for their sponsorship. And thanks for you to the audience at home. We'll see you next week on the Rec Poker Podcast. Good night, everybody.